I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Jews Wrestling Reviews. I am, of course, your host, CM Jew, the best Jew in the world. And this is episode 13 of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. I've made it to episode lucky number 13. And what pay-per-view have I picked out for lucky number 13? A pay-per-view that has 15 matches. What pay-per-view could that be? Well, that's the heyday of WCW, as we will be covering Slamboree. WCW wasn't around in 2006. I meant to say 1996. Slamboree 1996, a.k.a. the Lethal Lottery year, and the a.k.a. Battle Bowl year, where pretty much of the so-called 15 matches, 12 of them were these Lethal Lottery tag team matches that would lead to the Battle Bowl Battle Royal, which is a match that kind of doesn't make sense to me, but we'll get to that in the review. Oh, WCW. You know, it's after watching this that makes me realize, holy shit, TNA was just rehashing stuff they did in the WCW days. Because I thought Lethal Lottery was a TNA thing. Nope, it's a WCW thing. Early 90s WCW. But yes, Slamboree 1996. All these Lethal Lottery matches. You also had three title matches. You had for the Cruiserweight title, you had the champion, I had the champion Dean Malenko, should remember that, defending against Brad Armstrong of the Armstrong family, and of course, the Armstrong family includes the Road Dogg, Jesse James. You had the WCW United States Heavyweight Champion, Conan, defending again Jushin Liger. Or Jushin Thunder Liger, excuse me, would be the proper name. And of course, you had The Giant, aka Paul White, aka, well, it's the Big Show! With Jimmy Hart versus Sting, with Lex Luger, with the sort of stipulation that Luger and Hart have to be handcuffed together. Yeah, so. Tonight, we're going to have all that and more. I'm like looking at the list, like, oh my god, I have to get through all this. What have I done to myself? But that's here or there. Actually, I kind of want to start off two things to talk about. One, I do want to give a heads up. Good old Mean Gene himself, he was on the very first episode. He is going to be back next week as we have NXT TakeOver. I figure I should sort of make this an annual thing. Every time there's a big NXT live event, I'll have Gene on with me and we'll, you know, sort of review it there that week. Because NXT TakeOver is next week, and we at least know one match is going to be Tyson Kidd versus Adrian Neville for the NXT Championship. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe there's a match there of Ascension versus El Loco and Kalisto, which, oh my god, watching him in his debut, holy crap, that was amazing. I do believe, because it was announced before that this would be the lead-up to it, that the other match, or at least one of the other matches, is going to be, I'm trying to remember, I'm blanking on names, Sami Zayn versus Tyler Breeze, and more than likely we're going to have the finals of the Divas Tournament as well. So I'm looking forward to that. Just to give you a heads up, we're going to be also reviewing WCW Wrestle War 1992, I believe it is. It's the one that takes place in May. It's the last one under, if you're on the WWE Network, it's the last one under the Wrestle War name. It takes place in May, and again, it's, I guess you can say it's the precursor to the War Games match, because it's Sting Squadron versus the Dangerous Alliance, which, I'll be honest, I've never seen that match. I mean, I said that to Gene, he got all excited for watching it, and I'll be honest, I had never seen that match. I came to WCW pretty much in 94 when Hogan got there, so anything before that is really actually kind of new to me. So, like, seeing Cactus Jack there, and seeing Triple H and Steve Austin there is, it's always going to be a bit of a jolt, because I will always look at those guys as WWE, or in that case, WWF guys, but yeah, they started in WCW. So that's going to be next week. The other thing I kind of want to talk about is, I think one of the big news items that sort of fell this week was the, you know, Vince McMahon losing, I believe it was $350 million, and losing his title as a billionaire. I kind of want to talk about that, because I think there's a lot of worry about corporate takeover, because there's been talks, like, from one group who says you're trying to buy stock in the company, saying that there should be a complete change of management, which, you know, Vince McMahon's job. I guess I'll try to keep it short here. I'm not worried about it. To me, it's a perfect example of how stockholders and people who play the stock market and hedge fund managers and all of those group people view everything different. They can only see the flat-out numbers and the results. They don't look at what caused the results. Oh, well, the numbers say this, so of course it was a failure. It means it's failing because it's only been 3 months, and even though your year said you hope to have 1.3 million subscribers to balance everything out, have the cannibalization, right now you only have 700,000, and it's only been 3 months. Everybody, panic! As opposed to, again, with the truth, which is that the WWE said that they hope that by the end of the year to have 1.3 million to cannibalize the profits, and that they are actually seeing it in the future, in a couple of years, to be somewhere around 3.2 million viewers of the network, which has been steadily growing. You know, again, I say that because these stockholders and these people who play the stock market and buy stocks, and, you know, these businessmen who play with people's lives, yeah, I don't have nice things to say about them, they don't see the reality of, you know, something needs to grow. The WWE Network is a new thing. it was also because of the new deal that wasn't as much as they had hoped for, but it looks like NBC is really the only game in town that would give them what they want, and so they had to, you know, be lenient on some things. Again, I'm getting a lot of my information from a lot of the news reports, because, I mean, when it makes the front page of Yahoo, which, that's, like, where you go for news, but at the same point in time, when all the news sites, it's pretty much front page, you know, Vince McMahon lose $350 million, is he going under? I'm like, But it is a thing to where, you know, when you start a business out, it doesn't make money right away. It makes a loss because you're starting a business and you don't have those customers yet. You have to build your customer base. It's the same thing with Sony. I read a very similar report on Sony. Like, well, Sony lost so much money and maybe they should cut this division and this division. And at least one report I thought properly said, well, look, a large part of that came from they're still trying to gain their trust back from the big Sony security thing that happened, which they lost a lot of customers. And they also just launched the PS4, which is smoking, but still, because it just started out, they're going to, you know, record a loss for it for now. Things don't make profits right away. They make profits down the line. And it's the difference between stockholders and hedge fund managers and people who play the stock market who want their money now, when their profits now, as opposed to normal people like us who see the reality of, hey, I'm going to start this thing now, I'm going to take a loss on it now, because down the line, it's going to make a profit. That's how Facebook started. That's how Twitter started. And look where they are. So I'm not worried. I'm pretty sure Vince McMahon is going to make his money back tenfold. I don't think anybody's worried, because I think somebody successfully put on Twitter, I can't remember who it was, like, wow, he still has $750 million. Oh my God, let's start a collection for this poor man. And somebody else is like, I wish I had that money. Which is correct, but I mean, I think it's more talking about the business model, because I don't think if these people who are trying to out Vince McMahon, which I don't think they are, which is that's going to be fun to watch as well, watching these idiots try to go up against Vince McMahon. But, you know, if for some reason they were to succeed in outing Vince McMahon and the McMahon family out of the business, which is impossible to think of, you know, it would pretty much mean the end of the network and the return to the dark ages for wrestling. You'd probably see John Cena gone. You'd probably see a lot of... You'd probably see Daniel Bryan. You'd probably see any wrestler that does anything dangerous gone, because they'd want a safe product that they can promote to sponsors. I kind of laugh at it because I was watching the Legends of Wrestling on the WWE Network the other day and them talking about hardcore. And they got into the topic of the current era and, you know, hardcore and that stuff. And some I agree, but some I don't. I have my issues with the PG era, but this I don't think is the time or place to talk about that. Because I've already wasted 12 minutes, and we have a long list to go over. So let's go over the tale of the tape for Slamboree 1996, shall we? Because that was a great segue. So Slamboree 1996 for WCW took place on May 19th, 1996, with attendance of 7,791. It took place at the Riverside Centerplex in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and featured your color commentary team of Tony Schiavone, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, and the Weasel, the Brain, Bobby the Brain Heenan. With the tagline of, what must go up must come down hard. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Slamboree 1996.
Self high five. Too cool.
get right into it, shall we? We have a list. If you include the dark match, there was 16 matches on this bout. Of course, you had the 8 round 1 tag team matches of the Lethal Lottery. As a reveal, very shortly, actually. You had the then 3 second round matches, as there was a double count out in one of the first round matches. And then, of course, you had the Battle Bowl, and you had the 3 title matches. So, yeah. Am I doing my math right? Hold up. So, 3 and 4 is 7, and 8 is 15. I think I got it right. I'm more than likely wrong. The point is we have about 15, 16 matches to go through, including the dark match. Which is a long way to get to that, and I went round and round and round we go. Hey, see that train derailing from the station? Don't mind me, folks. I've done no drugs today. Somewhere, there's a group of people who have put faith in me who are facepalming. Let's start off, shall we? It's listed here on Wikipedia as the main event match. It's a dark match because it wasn't on the pay-per-view whatsoever. But you had the American Males of Marcus Bagwell, you know, a.k.a. soon-to-be Buff Bagwell, and Scotty Riggs, versus The Shark and Max, with the American Males winning after Riggs pinned Shark after Max inadvertently clotheslined him while Riggs was in the power slam position. Yeah, I didn't see it, so I can't quote on it. But I thought I'd just note that the match happened and is part of the pay-per-view. So let's start off with the first match we watched. Now, the thing about the Lethal Lottery is that tag teams could have been split up. That tag teams entered into it, and people picked numbers. And through the 2 rounds, whoever you pick numbers with, that would be your partner. So you could have partner versus partner, as in the case with our first match. As you had Road Warrior Animal and Booker T versus Road Warrior Hawk and Lex Luger. The match actually ends in a double countout. It's about 6 minutes long, so ends up in a double countout. As the Road Warriors ended up teaming up against their partners. You know, for what it is, it was a great opening match that really indicated the insanity of what Lethal Lockdown was. So as an introduction into what could happen during that night, it was a pretty good match to start off with as far as telling the story. As far as the match was pretty much WCW. I mean, Lex Luger was Lex Luger. It was great to see an early Booker T, early in his career, or at least starting to get towards like the end of his rookiness, I guess you'd say, because I guess you would say his prime would really start around 99 and go all the way to or pretty much start from there. 99 to at least 2009 or at least 2007. Because again, his run in WCW was, or WWE was very memorable for all obvious reasons. But it was great to see like old school Harlem Heat there. And you know, he was just as good as I remember him to be. And of course, it's the Road Warriors, which again, they're fun to watch. It was a short match. The Road Warriors never faced each other, and they couldn't. And that was the thing, like, could you face your tag team partner? As we'd seen a little bit. Our second match features, and I could not believe that they were actually part of it. But you had the tag team, because I forgot that they were a part of WCW. I always thought they were just part of ECW, because I remember them in all their clips. But it's Public Enemy, aka Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge, versus Chris Benoit and the Taskmaster, or Master, excuse me. And of course, for those who know your backstage history, there's a bit of fun there, considering, you know, what happened a little bit later. And I'm trying to remember, trying to see when that happened. I'm looking on Wikipedia right now. It would look like 97, 96. So this was around the time that this would happen. Yeah, this I think this may have been part of the, or at least the matches prior to this, which they had started a feud, probably started that feud that led to Sullivan actually losing his wife to Chris Benoit. And yes, that was the same wife that would, that Benoit would kill years later. Just to put it in perspective for those who want to know the history. And so, wow, I really brought down the room there, didn't I? Okay, I don't know how I'm going to get out of this one. I'm just going to go to the mask. The match, excuse me. I need a lot of water. This is what happens when you burn the roof of your mouth. But yeah, so Chris Benoit and the Taskmaster versus Public Enemy, which I was very shocked to see here. Because like I said, I always thought they were ECW guys and didn't realize that they left ECW for WCW in 96. I didn't even realize they were in the WWE. But with the match, you know, it was actually pretty fun to watch. It was a very short match, about 4 minutes. And ended where Rocket Rock like did a somersault flip over the rope into grunge, and they both basically fell on Benoit through a table. Again, the story there of the Taskmaster and Chris Benoit, who were at the time, like I said, feuding, was there. You know, Taskmaster claims he, you know, something happened to his leg, and that's why he couldn't make the save when they rolled Benoit in and pinned him. But yeah, Public Enemy gets the win. And it was pretty entertaining for a short match. Our next match features Rick Steiner and the Booty Man with the Booty Babe, who, let me just look up notes. I do, but yep, Brutus Beefcake. For those who don't know, that's who the Booty Man is. I was pretty sure that's who it was, but I just had to double check there. And of course, the Booty Babe is Kimberly Page, who had formerly been with DDP. Prior to Booty Man, I guess, wooing her away. But facing Sergeant Craig Pittman with the soul of WCW Teddy Long and Scott Steiner. Now, this was a really, of the, all the first round matches, I felt this was maybe the most entertaining, only because, again, you actually did have tag team partners facing each off each other. There's a point where Scott Steiner and Rick Steiner end up in the ring. They're, of course, on separate teams. And they actually do wrestle each other. And it's fun to watch. And, you know, you're watching the Steiner brothers in their prime, mind you, as tag team, going up against each other and, you know, actually wrestling each other. And hitting with suplexes and Germans and... Again, this is before, you know, some wrestlers would make it popular to do that sort of Japanese strong style and do all those type of suplexes that, you know, Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit and others would make popular. So seeing it here where, you know, again, it was still the days of, you know, a lot of forearm smashes and hit and wear downs and headlocks and all of that. And this seemed to be a bit of that new style of all these different suplexes from the top rope and the belly to backs and all of that. In fact, Rick pins Pittman with a German suplex with a bridge. And again, he actually like sort of drives him along the mat to keep him pinned, which was pretty impressive. So, for me, it was a very enjoyable match. Our next match of the evening features Jim Duggan and VK Wall Street, a.k.a. IRS, a.k.a. Mike Rotunda, a.k.a. the father of the father of the man who we all believe in, a.k.a. the man who is responsible for us to know that we've got the whole world in our hands. We've got the whole wide world in our hands. A.K.A. Follow the Buzzards. A.K.A. I will shut up now. Versus the Blue Bloods of Lord Steven Regal and Squire Dave Taylor. Which all went about 3 minutes. And again, it's lethal lottery insanity of, you know, VK Wall Street and Jim Duggan don't like each other. They're feuding. And they, you know, they try to one-up. Not even try to one-up, but they're like, VK Wall Street, numerous times tried to cost him the match. But Duggan pretty much defeats the Blue Bloods by himself using a, hitting Taylor with a taped up fist. So for what it was everything that the Lethal Lottery is as far as, so again, continuing that story of a lot of these matches were very short. They were like 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 4 minutes. Our next match of the evening features Dirty Dick Slater and Earl Robert Eaton versus Alex Wright. And I have to be honest here, he is one of my favorite wrestlers from the WCW era. I'm not ashamed to admit it now. Disco Inferno. Disco Inferno. Disco Inferno. Disco Inferno. Yeah, 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 yeah. And right now, everybody has just left the podcast. I mean, was his wrestling pretty basic? Absolutely. But was he entertaining as hell? You bet your ass. And I have to admit, I literally got off my couch and I was doing the Disco Inferno. Because it's just goofy fun. And isn't... Sometimes you have to have that in the wrestling. So, I enjoyed seeing him come out. And, of course, his antics ended up costing him the match as he gets blasted in the back of the head by Slater with his boot. Of course, by the way, Slater comes out with the Colonel. And, of course, Eaton comes out with the, I guess, the little... I don't want to say little person, but the short helper or whatever it is that's with the Blue Bloods. Because, again... Robert Eaton is part of the Blue Bloods, I guess, faction, you can say what it is. And they defeat Disco Inferno and Alex Wright. Again, it was also awesome to see Alex Wright, who would really, I think, shine later in WCW. Or in the coming years, I should say. But, you know, it's a short match, but again, like I said, very entertaining, if nothing else, for the fact that, you know, you had Disco Inferno, Disco Inferno, Disco Inferno. Yeah, 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 yeah. I'm a kid again. I don't know why. Our final... Well, not our final. Our next... Because we got three... Actually have two more after this. But our next match features Diamond Dallas Page and the Barbarian versus Meng and Hugh Morris. Now, this was actually my second favorite match of the first round. Again, you had another instance where you had a... two tag team partners facing each other with Barbarian versus Meng. The other one was that Diamond Dallas Page had replaced hard worker Bobby Walker, who had been injured. So he had, this was his return to WCW, I guess, after a short stint where he had been down on his luck. And I really enjoyed the match. It was a great match. I'm actually looking at... I'm trying to see. I think it's the... Actually, it's the third favorite match, because technically the first one with Road Warrior, Animal, Booker T, and Lex Luger, and Hawk was longer than this, but a lot of that also had to do with the count-out aspect of it. So really, as far as matches that just went straight forward, this was actually the second longest first-round match. There was some great tag team work between Barbarian and Page, and again... seeing Hugh Morris hit that tremendous moonsault. By the way, I'm also a Hugh Morris fan. Seeing him hit that moonsault really is impressive. And it was just a good, solid match, and I really enjoyed it. And again, it told the story of Lethal Lottery. Our next match featured Fire and Ice, which is Scott Norton and the Ice Train. He had also wrestled at one point under the name of M.I. Smooth. Versus Big Bubba Rogers, a.k.a. the Big Boss Man. Because if you remember from a... well, that took place in 94. I'm trying to look if he ever returned to the Big Boss Man while in W... yeah, he started Brown 95 as being known as Big Bubba Rogers. Because, again, they were afraid to basically use the Big Boss Man name. Since, I guess, WWE technically owned the rights to it. But Big Bubba Rogers and Stevie Ray of Harlem Heat. One of those instances where an actual tag, like Public Enemy, Fire and Ice bucked the trend and got lucky and won the lottery and got to stay together. And so, obviously, they won. They would also be the team that would get a bye into Battle Bowl because, like I said before, the World Warriors, Booker T, and Lex Luger had a double count out, and therefore, whoever got them in the second round basically got a pass to the Battle Bowl, and that would end up being Fire and Ice. Pretty short match. It's a lot of big, in this case, big, strong guys doing a lot of clotheslines and power moves and clubbers, and it was boring, to be honest. I mean, I saw really nothing of Fire and Ice that made me really interested in them, because I don't really remember them. I mean, they're not like the Road Warriors or the Steiners or the Faces of Doom, aka Ming and Barbarian and Harlem Heat, to where they're memorable tag teams. Obviously not, or else we'd talk about them more. Our final first round match featured Ric Flair and Randy Savage. Of course, Ric Flair with Woman and Elizabeth. Versus Arn Anderson and Eddie Guerrero. Now, this match had a lot of story. Again, there was currently a feud going on between Savage and Flair. And, of course, the match was used as a setup. Arn Anderson, sacrificing, basically double-crossing his partner, Eddie Guerrero, here, helping Flair get the win. But all of it was, again, a lot of story as far as what was going on. Flair's music hits, first Arn Anderson and Eddie Guerrero come to the ring. And, of course, they're talking about how Arn Anderson, it put up or shut up and it's my time, which ends up being a lie. Ric Flair's music hits first. He doesn't come out. Randy Savage's music comes out. He comes out because Ric Flair wanted to go second. Because he couldn't stand being next to Savage. Because, again, they're having this big feud because Flair had stole his money and stole Miss Elizabeth and everything. And then Arn Anderson, jumps Savage. Then Flair comes out, jumps Savage as well. The match is a giant clusterfuck. They're constantly beating on Savage. And as Arn Anderson and Flair are down there, Eddie Guerrero tries to get involved, and he ends up getting a DDT from Arn Anderson, which allows as Savage is fighting back, and then Flair gets pulled into the ring, gets the pin. It's a clusterfuck. I'm just trying to explain it the best I can. It leads to Flair and Savage going through to the second round. So that's the end of the first round. Most of the matches were okay. They perfectly told the story of Lethal Lottery. The matches I said that I really enjoyed, which was the Page Barbarian Ming Humorous match, and the Steiner Brothers Booty Man Pillman match. Again, I really enjoyed those matches. I also enjoyed the Public Enemy Benoit Taskmaster match, if nothing else for the ECW feel of it. So that's the end of the first round. And, I need to get another drink. So I'm going to play a couple of promos, and then we're going to get into our championship matches, our second round, our Battle Bowl, and the rest of Slamboree 1996.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I am a terrible geek. I don't watch Doctor Who, I don't care for anime, I've never seen any of the Harry Potter films, much less read the books. I like Star Wars and Star Trek okay, but I've never really ventured far into the extended universes of either property. Hell, I have never even watched a single episode of The Walking Dead. So what do I like?
Comic books.
I have been reading and collecting comic books since 1987, and I have been a fan of superheroes for as long as I can remember. Some would consider this a hobby, but I prefer to look at it as what it truly is, a crippling addiction that I may never recover from. To deal with this borderline personality disorder, I started a podcast in 2007 called
Views from the Long Lost.
Every 2 weeks, or so, depending on real life, I pick a particular series, or issue, or character, or whatever to talk about, and then I talk about them, because that's kind of the point of a podcast. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I have a guest, like my semi-regular co-host, the Irredeemable Shag, or my other semi-regular co-host, Thomas DJ, or with another friend from the podcasting world. The show is located at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. From there, you can find the iTunes link, the email address, as well as the backlog of episodes.
Views from the Long Box.
A podcast about comics, or a desperate cry for help? You decide. Every other Tuesday, or so, depending on real life, at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com.
Yeah, play it. Come on. Play it loud! Play it loud!
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Illogic. Foolish emotions. A constant irritant.
And transpire out! Freak!
Two!
Belong in the circus. Right next to the dog-faced boy.
True!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh,
shit.
It's a super prize package worth $9,300.
This isn't the biggest bag over the head punch in the face I ever got. God damn it!
Ow! Go away, Peyton!
And now, together by live simulation via the internet, your hosts, Scott Gardner.
He killed a police officer, for Christ's sake!
Thank God damn lucky he didn't kill off.
And Chris Honeywell.
Keep away! Keep away from me!
You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
So you're looking at me?
Yeah, because she thought you're some kind of freak. Now come on, let's go.
She likes me, eh?
No way.
Shut up, you freak!
Julius, you...
I say shut up! It's a manhole! A manhole!
TwoTrueFreaks.com.
Gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
the Superman Fan Podcast.
Superman in the Bronze Age.
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
The Schuster Herald Podcast.
It's Superman.
The Carazerald Podcast.
The Armored Hero Steel. A John Henry Allen Podcast.
The World's Best Podcast.
And
Radio Kale from SupermanHomepage.com.
Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weider,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Sam Rizzo,
Danny Sapp,
Matthew Epps,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V.
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right into it. Now, at the end of the first round, they actually did some drawing, which the first one was who would get the bye, which ended up being Fire and Ice, as I said, and also what the first match would be, which was Dick Slater and Robert Eaton versus VK Wall Street and Jim Duggan, which we'll get to in a second. But, of course, before the start of the first, the second round, mind you, they had a title match. They had, and this was, at least from what they were saying, the very first CW Cruiserweight title, which didn't make any sense. And I'm like, looking at it now, it had been inactive since 92. It became known as the Cruiserweight on a tournament in 96 on March 20th when Shinjin Otan defeated Chris Benoit. And then after that, Dean Malenko would win. So, yeah, it wasn't that it was the first. It was basically the first time that the Cruiserweight title had been defended on WCW pay-per-view. And so it was Dean Malenko versus Brad Armstrong of, I do believe, of the Armstrong family. Who I was right about being part of, you know, that legendary Armstrong family of, you know, that includes Road Dogg. You know what, this is a really good match. I love watching Dean Malenko work. Brad sold very well in the match. And you know what? This was probably my second favorite match of the evening. It was just a great, solid, classic WCW Cruiserweight match that showed exactly what the Cruiserweight division was about, which, to an extent, really was pushing, you know, the limit. Because, again, really, when you look at it, that's what the X division was about, and TNA was really taking that idea of what the Cruiserweight division did, which was pushing limits, and doing as well, and you see it perfectly here. It was a very enjoyable match, watching hold for hold, and again, to watch Dean Malenko, you know, finish somebody off with a very, basically an improvised move from the top rope, in this case, a gut buster from the very top rope. It was really impressive. And again, to see all the holds, I am a man, I just love watching, you know, a good mat wrestle, or match on the mat being wrestled where holds are just being countered and countered. So I really enjoyed the match. We then enter our second round of the Lethal Lottery. As I said, you had Dick Slater and Earl Robert Eaton, versus VK Wall Street and Jim Duggan, with Slater and Eaton winning when, basically after 4 minutes, VK Wall Street accidentally hits Duggan. Duggan hits him back, leads him into a roll-up, and of course they implode. Again, perfectly telling the story of Lethal Lottery. And just to complement that, our next match was Public Enemy of Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge versus Ric Flair and Randy Savage. Of course, Flair would woman and Miss Elizabeth. Yeah, basically Savage gets returned. It the same way. Savage's music hit, he refuses to go out. Flair's music hit, he comes out. And while they're going down the lane and basically throwing Savage's money into the crowd, Savage comes running out and attacks Flair. They ended up getting double counted out, and Public Enemy moves on without having to break a sweat because of forfeit. And of course, Savage having to be restrained by several wrestlers and security and such. Again, continuing that feud. So at the very least, while there's no match, I love the story element there. Give WCW some credit. They were good in those days of telling a coercive, storied feud. Even if the matches weren't that great. Our next match in the second round had Diamond Dallas Page and the Barbarian versus Rick Steiner and the Booty Man. This was probably my favorite match of the second round. It's also the final match of the second round. And again, I love the finish to where the Booty Man's basically pinning Barbarian. He's like in this very helpless state. And Page comes in, breaks up the pin with an elbow drop. And they get the win. I thought it was done extremely well. And it was just a very enjoyable match. For being only like 5 minutes long, there was a bit of a back and forth there that I really enjoyed. So our competitors at this, well, we'll get to our competitors for the Battle Bowl in just a moment. First, let me go over my favorite match of the evening. Because in our next match, we had another title match. We had for the WCW United States Heavyweight Championship, we had Conan, the WCW United States Heavyweight Champion, versus Shushin Thunder Liger. I love this match. A lot of technical sort of submissions being thrown around, a lot of high flying, the combination of that Mexican and Japanese style. I mean, Conan was also working for AAA promotion in Mexico at this point, and I know that because he had the AAA promotion logo on the back of his tights. It's just a great back and forth. And my favorite match of the night. All the moves and everything near the Fisherman Buster was impressive. The way they were trading holds and everything. Their costumes were wonderful. And all the high-flying maneuvers. Not as like crazy as we get a little bit later in WCW with Rey Mysterio and Ultimate Dragon and the likes. But still, just a... It should have been a cruiserweight match, but it was a great heavyweight championship match for the United States title. So I really, really enjoyed it. I mean, the finish where Conan finally gets Liger and hits him with this split. It's called the power drop, but it's listed here on Wikipedia as the Splash Mountain Power Bomb. It's basically a sit-out Rager's edge. As another way to put it. It was a very impressive finishing move. I didn't know that used to be Conan. Because again, I'm used to the Tequila Sunrise being Conan's finishing move. That sort of rolling into a submission. But I just love this match. Very. If I had to put one match worth watching on this pay-per-view, that would be the match worth watching. Our next match is the Battle Bowl match, in which the rules are you eliminate an opponent by pin or throwing them over the top rope, and I guess submission, but because nobody ever made anybody submit, I couldn't tell. I thought it was all by over the top rope, but then DDP started pinning people, and they were eliminated. I'm like looking at the match. It's a multi-competitor match where wrestlers are going to one by one. Typical, that takes me to the page for battle. Here, Battle Bowl. Two ring variation of the Battle Royal. Wrestlers are in one wing for the second ring. Yeah, it doesn't give me any rules on what the battle... I believe it was supposed to be over the top rope, but for some reason it was also you could be eliminated by pin. Doesn't make any sense to me either. But you had Diamond Dallas Page, the Barbarian, the Earl Robert Eaton, Ice Train, Scott Norton, Rocco Rock, Johnny Grunge, and Dick Slater. It's a battle royal. It didn't really get good until later when you had DDP, like, diamond cuttering everybody. This is where I believe you get the whole point of, you know, Orton, why is Orton trying to be DDP? the finish was somewhat enjoyable. You know, Barbarian goes for headbutt, misses. And then DDP hits the diamond cutter for the win. But with that being said, it's a battle royal. It is what it is. I was only entertained by DDP, to be quite honest. And I like, oh my god, he's going to win. This is like the match that really sort of launched that resurgence for his career. I just couldn't get the... There's this whole thing to where one foot hits... Again, I'm so used to the WWE in this sense to where both feet have to hit the ground. And again, I think that's the confusion a lot of people will have in this, is because only one foot hits... You know, Paige is thrown over the top rope, and he does the whole, you know, skinning the cat thing, sort of, where he's like hanging on to the rope, and one foot sort of hits the ground slightly, but the other one doesn't. And again, used to the battle royals in WWE, it's, well, he's not eliminated. Tony Schiavone keeps going like, why is he still in there? And again, I'm going to get to the commentary, because the commentary needs to be talked about afterwards. I'm saving up for it. But it was just... And they kept going back to it, and it just annoyed the hell out of me, and it just didn't make sense. And it's like, I thought this piece over the top rope battle royal, apparently you can pin people. It didn't make any sense. It's, we've seen flashes of the good that did come from WCW in this pay-per-view, but this, and as the next match also will be, it kind of shows you the bad that WCW did way too much. Because it's like, you know, for what it is, it's good. Diamond Dallas Page did a great job. But again, the storyline aspect there just ruined everything. They didn't finish it well. And basically it was there so they could take the title shot away from Page, which didn't make sense. But it is what it is. And that leaves us with our final match of the evening, which is the Giant, a.k.a. Paul White, a.k.a. The Big Show, with Jimmy Hart, versus Sting with Lex Luger, for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. This was just a giant clusterfuck. Again, Sting being Sting, trying to go up against this giant dominating a lot. Sting gets in a groove, and he's trying to finish him off, and of course it leads to, you know, all these things with Luger and Hart, who are handcuffed together. And then Hart gets on the ring apron with the megaphone. Luger trying to take it away from him and accidentally rip it out of his hand right into Sting's face, who has the Scorpion Deathlock on the Giant, which allows the Giant to pick him up, put him in a chokeslam for the win. It was a clusterfuck. It was the entire match, and I was never really interested in it. I just don't know. It's like, something should have made me interested in this match, and I never was. I was just bored. I'm like, oh, at the end of a long night, there were some good matches, but it's like, can this be over now? You know, and that was the last match of Slam Parade. Commentary throughout the evening was pretty much hilarious, because you had that thing to where you had Tony Schiavone trying to call the match straight. You had the Brain being the Brain and being brilliant in moments. And then, of course, you also had Dusty Rhodes, who just makes up vocabulary on the fly. Like, that's it. It's ruins right there. He's just trying to throw him with some ruins. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? There's the most brilliant moment is where they're talking about DDP, and he's kind of like, he went from the penthouse to the penthouse, you understand what I'm saying? And Brain goes, like, you hear it too. He's like trying to whisper to Tony Schiavone's ears, like, oh my god, Dusty doesn't know the difference between a penthouse and an outhouse. It is one of the more enjoyable aspects of this pay-per-view is listening to the commentary, because it's hilarious. It really is. Bobby the Brain Heenan and Dusty Rhodes are just hilarious together. I was laughing my ass off in certain places. It's like, really? You went there? But another thing to sort of talk about with this pay-per-view is you had right before the title match, there was an interview with Ric Flair, because Savage had been thrown out of the building. Ric Flair came out and talked about, and then, here comes Mongo! Shawn McMichaels comes out and sort of challenges Flair and Arn Anderson to a match, and here comes, I have it down here. I want to say Reggie White. But the challenge to a match, I believe, at the Great American Bash. Hold on, I'm just trying. Okay, yeah, it was Kevin Green and Shawn McMichaels that would face him at the Great American Bash. And I'm kind of looking at it because this is also the point where, if I remember right, again, this is 96. This is the lead up to the Bash at the Beach. I'll do that homework later. But they had an interview that would lead to that match happening. That's the only thing left to note. I guess all that's left is final thoughts. So, top three matches of the night, I would have to go, number one obviously is Conan versus Jushin Thunder Liger for the WCW United States title. Number two is Dean Malenko versus Brad Armstrong for the WCW Cruiserweight title. And I would have to say that number three would have to be, from the first round, Rick Steiner and the Booty Man versus Sergeant Craig Pillman and Scott Steiner. Those were the three best matches of the night. Which means you have to, like, again, that there are different places. Yeah, there was a nice pace to it. The fact that they got 15 matches on that card was damn impressive as far as I'm concerned. There were moments I enjoyed. There were moments I weren't enjoyed. There were moments where I was thoroughly entertained and into the match and into who was in the ring. And then there are moments where, you know, I'm just bored. I'm not into who's in the ring. And I'm like, can we just get to the next match already? I'm just bored. It Slamboree really is a mixed bag. There are some good matches worth watching. As I said, the Conan-Liger match, the Malenko-Armstrong match, and some of the first-round matches are enjoyable to watch. It's enjoyable to watch, you know, see a lot of old WWE stars who had made the jump to WCW, like VK Wall Street. It's just the Lethal Lottery, it did tell that story of the Lethal Lottery very, very well. It was mayhem, it was insanity, it was a clusterfuck at times. But I do have to admit, I was enjoyed at the end of the day watching this pay-per-view. It wasn't the best, it wasn't the greatest. It's a solid 3 out of 5. It's really in the middle. It's not as much of a clusterfuck as other WCW pay-per-views could have been. So Slamboree 1996 gets a 3 out of 5 from me. So that's my pipe bomb for tonight. Remember, if you have any comments you want to say about what I feel about Slamboree 1996, or anything you want to leave for upcoming reviews, like next week's review of both NXT TakeOver or WCW Wrestle War 1992, which features Sting Squadron versus the Dangerous Alliance, there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can contact the show by email at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page that you can find at www.facebook.com and search for The Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment there. You can also leave us a comment on Stitcher, because we do have a Stitcher page, which you can find at www.stitcher.com. We are The Absolution Network. Find us, like us, add us to your playlist, and like us there. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes The Otaku Momentum, Tom's Prerogative, The Mega Mix Podcast, and The Anime Cast, which you can find all on the Absolution Network. Also, make sure you check out the Shaft Plus Podcast, which you can find at www.shaftplus.com. Also, make sure you check out my other podcast, which includes Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, which will have some brand new Tokyo SOS reviews of Godzilla 2014 coming out soon. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And also, make sure you check out my Comic Book Crazy Podcasting Network, which features Sam Jew's Comic Book Crazy, which will be having an episode coming out soon, and Hexcast and Spectacular Webs. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site that, of course, includes Maddie J and the WrestleCast over at RVT Entertainment, Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, Brad Douglas and the Spider-Man Crawlspace, Steven Seiker and the Major Sports Podcast, and of course, Guy Gardner and the 2-2 Freaks Podcasting Network. So that is it for this episode of CMJU's Wrestling Reviews. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CMJU. I'm the best Jew in the world!
Every day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, everything without too negative or deep. But I believe, yes, I believe, I said that I believe. I stand among two feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and to the heights. Crown lights burning up, or to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be falling in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the legs and reveal your soul. You got to give yourself up, and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself, and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life.